planning trip on the flow, man. Just...
Some neighbors were saying way too loud.
That's only in the moment. You supposed to be up cooking breakfast to somebody. That's like an alarm clock.
Howdy, everybody. Welcome to the latest episode of Loose Lug Nuts. Today's episode, we're going from Coda to Richmond. This is Thomas Dick. I actually have someone with me. This week I went solo, but we got Tyler Pig. No one knows where Evan is. He's wherever the sheep are, just chasing after the sheep. But first, we're going to break down not much news again. The news this year has been non-existent. There's some rumors, though. First, we have rumors. Racer reports that multiple sources are telling them that NASCAR has been pursuing a 50% stake in the Long Beach Grand Prix, which that's been on the Indy calendar since 1984. So the thought is they would take over that race and tell Indy to pound sand or maybe have a double-decker affair there. A racer also says Penske Entertainment, which is odd, owners of not only Roger Penske owns both this and a race team, but he owns the NTT IndyCar Series in Indy Motor Speedway, and he's the one blocking it. So that's, wow. Thoughts on that?
That's an odd one. I kind of thought Roger Penske would love to get another road course, Grand Prix style course on the NASCAR calendar. But it would make sense. It gets us back into this California swing that we don't have. And it's been since Fontana has been taken offline due to construction. So give me a little California race. I don't really love adding another road course to the race schedule for whatever this would take place, maybe 26, 27. But there's definitely some legs to it. But I'm a little surprised that Penske's blocking it.
Yeah, I don't hate the idea of a race there. I would have actually preferred that if you're going to do a road course over what they tried to do in Chicago or what they're trying to do, I guess.
I would replace it with the Roval with Long Beach.
Yeah, there you go. And replace Chicago with Road America.
Yep.
So all those people that like North Wilkesboro, because it was the roots of NASCAR. Well, it really was the roots of NASCAR. There's long been rumored it to be a moonshine cave beneath the grandstands, and they actually unearthed it. The big room where moonshining activities were held at was found underneath the concrete grandstands near Turn 1. Thoughts on that?
One, it must be all Junior Johnson's moonshine, which is what was my first thought, because he's the original bootlegger turned NASCAR star. It's pretty interesting that they did as much work to North Wilkesboro as they did, 2 years ago to get that thing going, and this actually was never found. But then I guess they just kept digging and digging and digging, and then all of a sudden they ran into it and ran into the old moonshine cave.
Yeah,
wild they raced there for 45 years and never ran into it either.
Yeah, well, when I went there in, during COVID, I guess it was 2021 spring, just looking at the site there, I could see where there might have been a crystal meth lab there. So I don't see how you could also not think there might be a moonshine cave there. So nice they're fixing it up, though. I wanted to get your thoughts because I had no one to talk to last week. Thoughts on the Bristol races?
Man, we feel like we were back to like Phoenix and some other places 3 years ago where it was just constantly tire wear the entire time. And I actually didn't get to watch all the race. I had some parents in town that needed a trip back to Austin to the airport, so I listened to it. And by like lap 35, you could tell that the it was a PR in race. That whole crew knew that it was going to be a long, long day, because that was when that first kind of that first set of pit stops started in lap 35, lap 36, and you just basically heard every pit reporter talk about how beaded the tires were and how they were ripped to shreds, basically. And then I really knew it was a problem when Kyle Busch went from second to 20th in about four laps. That means they had no control over their car, and he was just puttering around them. What I found interesting is they actually, I mean, it's almost like a gentleman's agreement. Like, lap times around Bristol are usually around like 15.2, 15.4. Well, they were like running lap times within the 17, 17.5 range pretty much the entire end of stage one and first part of stage two. So that was kind of disappointing. I was excited not to have the dirt, but, overall, it ended up being a really good race for Denny Hamlin in a track he's had a lot of success at.
Well, I thought the racing was good to have that in it, but I don't think the drivers and the teams needed to know, like, and like even Chase Elliott after the race, you could tell he was like sort of pissed off. He's like, these were not the same tires that we had last spring, or maybe it was Blaney said that, but then like everyone seemed to tempered their thing with, hey, let's not rush into changing this. If we know going in the tires will last this long, we can run this long. To me, the drivers were just shocked by what happened. So,
yeah. And the other thing too, is they didn't change the package. Like that was the whole deal. That's kind of, I read something the other day that Goodyear was like kind of befuddled by it, that they acted like they had kind of like no clue, because their response basically, when they kind of got a question out of it after the post race, was like, we don't know either, because nothing really changed significantly than what we ran here, you know, in the fall and even in the spring. So it felt like a little like a race we dealt with, you know, 2 or 3 years ago, where tire wear was a major issue the first year of the next gen cars. But overall, I thought the racing actually picked up once they when they got to stage three, and just was a really good day for Ryan, for Denny Hamlin. I was selfishly pulling for Martin Truex. It's a race he's never won at. Had a lot of top tens, but they are both off to a really good start and have kind of got it figured out in both cars over the last 2 weeks.
So we are now on to COTA. We had racing at the Circuit of Americas. I wanted to get out there, but I got a gimpy foot, and a 3.5 mile track's probably not where you go when you have a gimpy foot. So I enjoyed all the activities on the television. First we had the Cup Series, Eco Park Automotive Grand Prix. William Byron won the pole for the second year in a row. Ty Gibbs was in front row alongside him. He tied his best starting position. Christopher Bell and defending champ Tyler Reddick were in row two. So we start the race, and Byron and Reddick get out in front. Lap two, Truex and Wallace. Corey LaJoie got in the dirt instead of waiting to get back on the track. He's like, F it. And he just jumps back on the track and he whacks both of them. So they got a pit early. Luckily, they did not lose a lap just because the track's 3.5 miles long. By lap three, though, William Byron, you could tell it wasn't just qualifying trim that got him the pole. Their car's fast. And they'll say at the end of the race that they made no adjustments on the car all day, which is pretty phenomenal. Lap five, Nemechek is – we're going to see this all race. They got this – I'm confused by it myself. Like, there's only four, five, six. There's three turns, the S's, where you can't go off the track. If you do, you're called exceeding track limits. And the penalty for that's a drive-through. Unless it's on the last lap of the race, in which case it is 30 seconds, which is a lot. That'll come up in one of the other races. But just a load of penalties. Like every time there was really good action, you would hear like 20 seconds later, so-and-so has got to do a drive-through. But anyway, at this point, Gibbs is in second. Behind Byron. So Toyotas are looking good.
Yeah, well, they were looked good all day long for the most part. Lap 10, AJ Allmendinger, he's in the call-in car. He's up to six, but William Byron stretched that lead over 2.5 seconds over Ty Gibbs. He's followed by Bell, Reddick, and Chastain in the top five. And Christopher Bell is really making a run midway through this stage. Ty Gibbs gets a really good run midway through it at lap 11, cuts the deficit really down to 2 seconds. That was about as close as he would get in stage one, though, is lap 12, four to go. Get a lot of people short pitting and saying they'll pass on the stage points. which is, I'm a little surprised that it came this early in the race when they did it, to be honest with you, TD.
Yeah, because to me, the two stop made the most sense, which would mean you'd pit after the stage was over.
Yep.
And only one person's going to end up doing that, I believe.
Correct.
Yeah, I didn't get it. And we got rid of stage breaks. why'd they bring them back?
Yeah, that was the best part of road courses last year, despite having nine of them, it felt like, on the schedule, is that we just kept racing. And so yeah. I felt like it gave them more of an incentive to take the stage break, say, we're not going to worry about the stage points. We'll short pit and then try to get reset in the early part of stage two to make the run back through the field. I was a little surprised that it kind of happened in stage one. I thought we might see it towards the end of stage two, but
yeah,
kind of got it early on in stage one. And then
Michael McDowell brought it up. Like, if you're known to be a short track guy, like, you can go out and you can win the first stage, you can win the second stage, you can win the race. If you're a super speedway guy, you can win the first stage, you can win the second stage, you can win the race. Well, if you're a road course guy, it's like, screw you. If you want to win the stages and get those stage points, you're probably not going to win the race. So no. Why are road course guys penalized with these stupid pit stops that are caution flags? I guess you don't have to pit, but
I would even be persuaded that we could just, like, either we go back to the model we had last year where we gave the stage points out, and we say, hey, here's the deal. You get your stage points. No caution, we continue to race, or we limited this race to just two stages, basically. Yeah. It cut that number in half, but we'll see. I don't know if NASCAR will do that. The only other thing that happened during this, basically in stage one, that really kind of messed up the field, Chase Briscoe gets the penalty for cutting the S's as well, coming in as he was trying to pit, and so it ends up getting him. But Christopher Bell stays out. He gets the playoff point, and he cruises to the stage one by 18 seconds because everybody else is basically around the half of the track around them to get back.
Yeah, he's followed by Suarez, McDowell, Cindric, and Austin Dillon in the top five. I have to say Austin because you never know when Ty's going to show up in a car like he is this week in Richmond. Stenhouse, Byron, Gibbs, Reddick, and Chastain in the top 10. So some of those guys who pitted, short pitted, still got some points. Okay, so this is the other thing. You have the stage breaks because allegedly you want to create excitement in the middle of the race of people racing to the finish line. Well, Fox goes to commercial break instantly when Bell crosses instead of staying out to see the alleged battles for the top 10 spots.
Yeah, I don't understand that because that was the whole point of having the stage breaks built in. And actually had some really good racing in the back between Byron and Gibbs at the line. Same with, I think, Reddick and Chastain. So I don't know. It ended up kind of just – it was like, hey, Christopher Bell won the race. And then when we got back – here's everybody else. So I know they were 20 seconds behind, but what's the point of this exciting finish for stage one at a pretty good track like COTA when you just click straight to commercial?
Yeah, that's what I was sold. So we come to stage two, and at this pit stop, all the people that didn't short pit, you would think would pit, but no, Christopher Bell and Michael McDowell did not pit. They're on a two pit strategy. They're going to try to make it to the 20s before they pit. So lap 19, we get to restart. McDowell didn't start as well as Bell did. He drops back a couple of spots, but Bell's out front looking good.
Yeah, and then lap 26, I'm assuming does Kevin Harvick have like a word of the week?
He does.
Because it was kerfuffle. It was kerfuffle this week.
My word of the week was gonad.
And they
sounded like gonads.
Yeah, and I need to start doing that if I get back to doing radio broadcasts. Is just using like a good word. If somebody will text those to me, I'd be glad to do it.
Later in the race, he tries to get, I want to say, Bowyer to use it, and Bowyer just ignored him. He's like, go ahead, Bowyer, you can say it. And I think it was Bowyer. One of them said it, and I forget which one, Mike or Clint. But he tried to get the other one to say it. Now I got to go back and listen to the race again.
Yeah,
he tried to get the other one to say it, and the other one just pretended it was Clint. And Clint pretended like he didn't hear Harvick at all.
Yeah, the headsets weren't working. On lap 26, by the way, SBG, who's in the race, ends up speeding on pit road. Not the first time we saw that today, but it was kind of sad. He was actually on a pretty good run. Then we started to see the short pitting in, this time on lap 28 with three to go on the stage. And then Byron, Gibbs, and Chastain pit right before pit road closes.
Yeah, right, then stage break. Yeah, then we see poor Michael McDowell. He's a road coach warrior. I don't know if you know this, but he has damaged steering. His power steering appears to be gone. He's all the way back in 39th place. Very sad.
Then Denny Hamlin, who really took control of the race midway through stage two, he wins the stage, followed by Ryan Blaney, Martin Truex Jr., Todd Gilliland, and Ryan Preece in the top five, and Brad Keselowski, John Hunter Nemechek, William Byron, Daniel Hemric, and Josh Berry close out stage two. That's a pretty – that's a kind of a jumbled up stage two top ten, but actually it ended up being pretty good dates for guys like John Hunter Nemechek, Brad Keselowski, and Josh Berry. They were in the running pretty much in the entire second stage the whole time.
I'm going to make a couple things I noticed from this race. A, I can never tell. Like, they need to dictate more often who has stopped twice, who's like, or when the last time they stopped, because you're watching the race and there's a lot of times you have no idea who has the advantage of from when they pitted last. You got to like try to remember. It's like, I don't have a very good memory. And then the other thing is this race, more than other road races I've ever seen, like, it seemed like you could mess up, and usually in a road, like old Watkins Glen, if you messed up and went to the back of the thing, you were never getting back up front. But this one, it seemed like a lot of people went back and ended up up front. So I don't know if it's that wacky start they got where you could pass like 10 cars, go six wide down the front stretch or what. Because we'll see it here in a little bit in the Xfinity race. Someone's back of the field with like five laps to go and they win. So
on to the final stage. So we start and restart lap 34. William Byron goes into the turn hard, followed by Chastain and Ty Gibbs. Lap 36, Ty Gibbs not the first time he tried this move today, but the one where he almost caused the biggest wreck. He tries to dive bomb at turn one, unable to get the hold on William Byron. And then Byron really passes him by at lap 38 and takes the lead for good. Ross Chastain is about a second lead. And in lap 39, big penalty for Chase Elliott and from the fifth place spot. He misses the S's. That drops him back out of the top 20 in what was actually a pretty good day for the nine car. Only thing is, I'm not sure if her back he dropped because Fox never really showed it. They just only give us the 1 through 20. And then maybe every two times a race, they tell us the entire field.
Yeah, like every time someone got penalized, I would look to see how far they dropped. And yeah, they showed 21 to 39 positions once every 420 seconds, 7 minutes. That's not going to cut it.
Yeah.
Lap 42, 27 to go. SVG's lost first gear. That's very sad. Not the best track to lose it at. 26 to go. Byron tries to dive bomb Chastain for the lead going into the first turn, but he's unsuccessful. But 25 to go, he gets by. And then Austin Dillon and Kyle Larson are the first ones to take their last pit stops from the they're back in the 20s. So it really doesn't affect the race. But to me, those two were going to have a tough time finishing the race with 25 laps to go, especially if there's overtime.
And then Austin Dillon has a tough time finishing races at a road course, period, let alone without the gas. So I was a little shocked the same that both cars went in. Especially the three car where road courses, he's just trying to get it home.
Yeah. And then 24 to go. Bowman, he's the first top 10 car to pit. He pits from fourth place. So, once again, if you got any overtimes, this is seemed a bit early to go, but I'm not a pit boss, pit crew chief. I always say pit boss. That's a guy that works at a barbecue place, crew chief. Although they pit could boss be the same makes guy. Sense because you're at the pits and you're the boss.
Maybe that's what we should start calling them. Maybe that's what we should go with. Lap 23 to go. William Byron and Ross Chastain, they begin to pin in front of the field. That puts Ty Gibbs and Tyler Reddick in the lead. Then Bowman cycles out in front of Chastain right after as they come off pit road. 22 to go. Ty Gibbs is in the pits, followed by Tyler Reddick and Christopher Bell stay on the track. And then Byron's pit stop, by the way, 10.4, which puts him in a really good position to get out of the pits. And then Ross Chastain, who actually had a pretty good car all day, the pit stop really set him off 3 seconds behind Byron. His crew had him out at 13.3.
Yeah, 3 point difference. That's, that could be the difference in a race. Yeah, we finally get Reddick and Bell pit by lap 19. So the only cars ahead of Byron are Truex and SVG, who still have one more pit stop. 17 to go. Truex finally pits And we've cycled through all the pit stops, and it's Byron, Bowman, and Gibbs. 13 to go. Byron is up 3 seconds on Bowman, then the Toyotas. Gibbs, Reddick, and Bell is coming quick. Like we said, he had a fast car all day. 11 to go. It's Gibbs and Bell. Gibbs is in third. Bell is in fourth and gaining about a lap a second. 9 to go. Gibbs is having trouble getting by Bowman for second. So Bell's right on his behind. They're 6 seconds behind Byron. 8 to go. Gibbs gets by Bowman. Here's where Bowman is. They're telling him to save fuel because he went too early. Like, I could have told him he went too early.
Yeah, if he just goes on lap 20, he doesn't have to save any fuel, but he decided to go lap 24 and could really almost.
Well, and the funny thing is, the post race interview, they talked to him and he's like, "Oh, I want to thank my crew, had such a great strategy." But then he's like, "Yeah, towards the end, I had to drive pretty slow to save
gas." Didn't have a lot left.
So they didn't have a great strategy.
Yeah, and then 6 to go after Ty Gibbs passes Alex Bowman. 8 to go, 6 to go. Christopher Bell gets past him. So William Byron with about a 2.7 second lead ahead of Ty Gibbs and about 5 seconds ahead of Christopher Bell. Could be interesting. Could not be. We'll see what Ty Gibbs does. 3 to go. William Byron with still about a 2.5 second lead as Ty Gibbs tries to cut it down. Christopher Bell coming on pretty strong with about down only 2.9 seconds. Going into turn 15, Christopher Bell finally passes Ty Gibbs for second, and Gibbs really doesn't hold him up at all. And then 2 to go, Christopher Bell has to make about 2.5 seconds up. That's really when we all knew the race was over, as William Byron takes the white flag. Christopher Bell trims it down to second, 1.7 seconds, but that really doesn't matter. William Byron wins the race, pretty much going away the entire way for his second win of the season, 12th of his career. And he actually has 10 next-gen car wins, TD, which leads all racers in NASCAR. That's a great stat that we can use that no one's talked about.
Yeah, well, and as someone I saw, they called it the Gen. What, Gen 7? Is that what it is?
Yeah, that's a new, by the way, the new thing is Gen 7. It was next gen, and now it's Gen 7.
Yeah. Well, I guess because it has to be next gen, or it has to be Gen 7, because when they're coming up with the next generation, they'll be calling that next gen.
Maybe. Maybe they should talk
car
about
tomorrow?
The
is it a car tomorrow?
Car tomorrow. Bring the spoiler back.
I call it the flying shoebox generation. And guess what? Guess what I saw? Maybe it was an old clip, because I never actually saw it where it said live in the upper right-hand corner. It looked like the big hat, the effing big hat was back.
Yeah, I think it was. I thought I saw it. Very disappointing.
Son of a, I hope he gets gout.
If you won 12 races, man, you don't need the big hat anymore. You know, don't be Carl Edwards slipping off the back of the, or flipping off the race car. Just win.
And if you want to be taken seriously as the best driver at Hendrick Motorsports, get rid of the big hat. Get a mini hat. Like, put a little mini hat on your head.
Yeah. Just the guy that raced that car pretty well for about 20 years, who won like almost 80 some races, he had no hat. He just wore a Rainbow Warrior coat or a Rainbow Warrior jacket, maybe a Noble Winston hat when they gave it to him. It was fine. But don't need the big hat. Don't need the hat. I agree. He's been their best driver the last 2 years. Like, don't do it. That's all I got. All right. Christopher Bell wraps it up. Ty Gibbs in third. Alex Bowman in fourth. Really good day for the 48 car, followed by Tyler Reddick, who rounds out the top five. No one mentions this on the broadcast. AJ Allmendinger, sixth place finish in a road course. There you go. But he wasn't in the Daniel Hemric
get
the owner's points, which I didn't get.
Yeah, I don't understand. Like I said, you might be thinking, oh, you're telling Daniel Hemric he's not a good driver. Well, guess what?
AJ Allmendinger's better.
Yeah, like it's a 20. Like I looked it up, it was like a 30-point difference, 25-point difference. They're in the top 20 in the point standings if they put them in that car. Now, I don't know how much paperwork needs to be filled out and whatnot, but I've seen it done by other teams before, so I know it can be.
Hey, 2311 did it quite well 2 years ago when they were flipping crews and crew chiefs and drivers and cars and numbers. I mean, it can be done. That's all I'm saying. Ross Chastain takes seventh, followed by Christopher Buescher, Kyle Busch, and Martin Truex Jr. rounds out the top 10. Back-to-back top 10s for Martin Truex Jr., which is not his specialty on a road course.
Yeah, and five straight top 10s for Ty Gibbs. He's the only driver to have five top 10s this year. So he finished 17th, I believe, at Daytona.
Hot take. I think Ty Gibbs may win a race or at least two races this year. I think he has been – I've been overly impressed. I thought he had a good rookie year. We all know his Xfinity series driving prowess and how everybody didn't really like him. But I think he's been really, really good for Joe Gibbs Racing. And
I will say,
as a guy, I think he can win a race in the next couple weeks.
I will say he hit someone during a dinger, I think it was.
Dinger.
During a yellow flag lap. So I think old Ty Gibbs that everyone wants to punch in the face might be coming back too, though.
Hey, if it wins him a race, he may have to do it. You know, well, he was pretty good at moving folks out of the way on the Xfinity series. Hasn't done it as much on the Cup series, but yeah, five straight top tens is no joke. A lot of momentum for the old 54 car.
So now we go to the Xfinity race. It was the day before Focused Health 250. Kyle Larson wins the pole, but he has to go to the rear because of an adjustment. Other notables going to the rear: Sheldon Creed, Ty Gibbs, John Hunter Nemechek. So three Joe Gibbs Racing cars, Kaz Grala and Preston Pardis did not qualify, which was very sad. We got racers in the race they highlighted before from New Zealand, Russia. Are we allowed to say they're from Russia? They don't boycott them like the Olympics?
Yeah, I guess not. I guess they're fine.
They're from the Russian Federation.
There's not an international governing committee of racing to put them to make a call, I guess.
Canada, and then a guy who is English, but he was born in the United Arab Emirates. Front row is going to be Shane Van Gisbergen and AJ Allmendinger. This is a rule I saw that doesn't make any sense to me. So they start off with, hey, Kyle Larson's in front row. So they do the parade laps, and he's in the front row. Then him and Gibbs both go to the go to the back. So to me, AJ Allmendinger, or actually Chandler Smith, who qualified fourth and is in the second row, should move up to that first spot. Should he not?
Yeah, I think I would agree with that.
But no,
but that's not
you
what
stay
happened.
In the row you qualified in. So because Allmendinger qualified fifth, he got moved up to the front row.
So what's the
instead of the car that was in fourth,
who had the faster
time? That I don't get that. But anyways, just an oddity, and I had never noticed it before. Maybe that just says I'm a sucky NASCAR fan if I'm just noticing this. But God, I've never seen the parade laps before. And I saw, and I was like, why is he moving up? And he's not. And yeah. So it was a really good start for Dinger. Van Gisbergen flies in front with Chandler Smith behind. Austin Hill pushes Sammy Smith into Chandler Smith and spins him around. So they're all going to get knocked out of the top 10 early on. So lap five, we get SVG and Dinger are flying. They're a 6 full seconds ahead of the field. Karam is in third. And then while Adam Alexander, I forget what driver, he's yapping about someone in prom for a while. And while it's happening, they're pushing Sheldon Creed's car back into the garage and no one says anything.
Oh, Sheldon Creed's car is going to the garage, guys, after that 30-second diatribe. Yeah.
I think it was Daniel Suarez mentioned it like 15, 20 seconds later. He's like, I think I see
Sheldon Creed getting wheeled back to the back of to the garage.
Have some awareness.
Yeah, it wasn't great. I will say this, tip of the cap, Daniel Suarez, he's actually pretty good in the booth. I actually enjoyed listening to him. A couple things that happened in between that. Big damage for Sam Mayer on lap 7 as he rears his teammate Justin Allgaier, but they're still in the top 10. Lap 9, SVG and Dinger are now 10 seconds ahead, and just kind of in a two-pack race ahead of everybody. But here comes Ty Gibbs, who's moving his way up. He's in the 7th. Kyle Larson's worked his way up from the back. He's in the 15th. And then lap 10, Ty Gibbs has a penalty for cutting the S's, which is a theme that will continue throughout the entire weekend. From 7th place back to 15th, he makes the pass through, and SVG misses a turn, and Dinger passes him for the lead.
Yeah, then lap 12, Austin Hill misses the S's. He's going to have to serve a penalty from 5th place. Before they get to 2 to go and the pits close, Dinger and SVG short pitch the stage. They both have a pretty slow stop, though. They end up cycling out 8th and 10th. Probably should have cycled out in around the 5. They had such a big lead. Should have cycled out like 5th and 7th, 5th and 6th.
Yeah.
Kligerman now in the front row. or he's in front of Sammy Smith and Sage Karam. He wins the stage, Parker Kligerman. He's followed by Smith, Karam, Parker Retzloff, and Riley Herbst. Austin Hill, Alex LeBay, AJ Allmendinger, Josh Balicki, and SVG round out the top 10. So they were going so fast, they pitted and still got some points.
Really, really kind of the that's how good those two cars were all afternoon. So we go to stage two. Dinger starts in, out in front after everyone makes their pit stops. SVG gets eaten up, and he gets actually dropped back to fifth. Kyle Larson is actually near the front in second as he's worked his way through the field, followed by Jesse Love, who was really good in this race. Ty Gibbs and SVG. Lap 19, another tough break for Sam Mayers. He gets a penalty for cutting the S's in seventh plate. He has to pass through. And again, like I said, Daniel Suarez caught it when he was actually going through the S's. He noticed it immediately and said, that's probably going to be a penalty. And like, just like that, NASCAR called it, which I, again, thought he did a good job on the broadcast. Lap 21, Sammy Smith spins around Cole Custer as they're battling for six. Custer gets knocked all the way back to 19th. And then Custer knocks off Jesse Love's rear bumper in the collision, which kind of sucked because I thought Jesse Love actually was pretty impressive early on in the race.
When they said it would help his car, what's his nuts? Logano's like, yeah,
like Joey Logano did.
You get down force and upper force and all sorts of forces. And apparently, at super speedways, you got to fix that. But apparently, road courses are like, no,
I kind of thought road courses, like it was kind of like you didn't want to really mess with the car at all because you were just not making left handed turns. But I guess I was wrong.
Yeah. Lap 24, Dinger's 2 seconds ahead of Larson, 2.6 seconds ahead of SVG. Ty Gibbs, 5 seconds back, and then it's really far back to the rest of the pack. Lap 27, SVG has a power move to get by Larson for second after Larson attempted to pass Dinger. The short pinning starts with three to go. Love and Nemechek, they are too fast exiting. They get a lot of penalties this race. Another slow stop for SVG, and it comes out Dinger, Larson, SVG. Jones, Herbst, Custer, and LeBay don't pit. Brandon Jones cruises to his first stage win since 2022. But as we said, it's a fake stage win because all this shit pit nonsense. Riley Herbst, second, Custer third, Dinger fourth, Kyle Larson in the top five, SVG, LeBay, Ryan Sieg, Josh Balicki, and Ty Gibbs in the top 10. But guess what?
Oh, we cut the S's, didn't we?
Cut the S's. Brandon Jones cut the effing S's. So he does not get the stage win. So it's Herbst who gets his first stage win of this season. Very sad for Brandon Jones. Has had a rough few years ever since Ty Gibbs bludgeoned him in that race near the end of 2 years ago.
Remember, I picked him to be like the dark horse to like make the playoffs last year in Xfinity, and boy, was I way or not to make the playoffs, make the final four, and I was way off. So don't trust that pick. We go to stage three. Dinger wins the restart. It's Dinger, Larson, SVG out in front by the end of lap 31 with 12 to go. SVG has passed Kyle Larson for second. 11 to go, Chandler Smith spins out Sammy Smith from seventh place, so a little Smith on Smith crime. Daniel Suarez believed it was on purpose for a little earlier race retaliation. And then 9 to go, SVG passes Dinger as both ran their fastest lap of the race. And then with 8 to go, Sam Mayer and Justin Allgaier are teammates not very happy with each other from their race incident earlier. And there is a lot of banging going on.
Yeah, Sam Mayer's pit box actually says it will cut the shit out. You need to finish a race.
Yeah.
Like three or four races you have not finished. You need to finish this effing race.
Yeah. So they settled down a little bit. 4 out of 5. Yeah. We DNF'd in 4 out of 5. So
6 to go. Patrick Gallagher's in the gravel, but he's able to get it going. SVG is 1.8 seconds ahead of Dinger. Looks like he might cruise to win. Kyle Larson. He said he has a flat spot, and he's probably gonna pit with 6 to go. Very sad. No chance he possibly wins this race. 4 to go. SVG is now in second, cruising ahead unless something f's it up for him. And guess what?
We had it happen.
Ed Jones, I forgot the car. This is the most frustrating part to me of NASCAR. Is the slapdickery in the back. I forgot what car he got into it with, but it's two guys that shouldn't cause the results of the race to be altered, but they do. Because Ed Jones not only stopped, but he's got fluid on the track. So they're going to not only, I think they red flagged it.
Yeah, they red flagged it.
So we're going to go to NASCAR overtime. Poor SVG looked like he was cruising. So this was an odd choice to me. Dinger, instead of going next to SVG, decides to go behind SVG. That puts their mortal enemy, Ty Gibbs, next to SVG. And as we said, Larson pitted, so he's outside the top 20. So we start, and SVG knocks Ty Gibbs way out on turn one. But Austin Hill, he slips in behind, in between those two while they're duking it out. And Austin Hill takes the lead. And before they take the white flag, the Russian agent, Danny Kvyat, and the Honey Badger, Leland Honeyman, are in a really dumb battle, once again, affecting the result of the race. Yep. And they plow in the poor Riley Herbst, who was just minding his own business. They bring out the yellow. So we're going to have NASCAR double overtime with Austin Hill up front. Dinger gets a penalty for cutting the S's, so his day is done. Kligerman cut the S's. He didn't get penalized.
Nope.
It happened like right after each other.
They're literally like a half a second behind each other. And it didn't stop NASCAR from giving Dinger the penalty. But Parker Kligerman, who already was happy, got a stage point. He may have cut the S's there. But hey, I guess if you didn't see it, I didn't see it.
Yeah, so we're going to have the double overtime. I think I had it wrong before. Austin Hill wasn't in front yet. SVG is going to start with Sam Mayer next to him. So they start to go up the hill. The post-race comments on this one are funny. Austin Hill just plows SVG from behind and pushes him past the first turn. So Hill takes the lead. SVG is coming back full speed, and after he passes Karen for second, he's like, F it, I'm going after Austin Hill. He's not going to win the race. As they take the white flag, it's SVG right on Hill's tail. But guess who is in third place?
Kyle Larson, back from the dead. As we mentioned, how could he win this race? He was in 20th six laps ago.
He was outside the 20s. Like, once again, yeah. We don't know where exactly he was. But, yeah, he pitted to change the tire because he had the flat spot. Yeah, he's in third place. SVG plows hard in the hill, knocks him off the track. They were going to, like, turn 11, I believe.
Yeah.
Larson passes them both for the lead. SVG passes Hill right before the checkered flag. So you get Kyle Larson out of nowhere winning the race. SVG, this is – we think he finished second.
Except he cut the S's and he finished 27 thanks to a 30-second penalty.
30-second penalty.
Very Formula One in NASCAR.
That's a 25-point deduction for cutting the corner. That is the same penalty Sheldon Creed got for intentionally wrecking Sammy Smith last year.
Yeah, yeah. It's the last lap, guys. Let's just get it over with. We've already had double overtime. SVG was the second best car of the whole weekend. And he's going to finish 27th. I don't like it. Don't like it at all. And you're right. It is a 25-point deduction, basically, by finishing from there, from second to 27th.
So Hill in second, Nemechek third, Custer fourth, Kligerman fifth. Jesse Love, Austin Green, Chandler Smith, Sam Mayer, and A.J. Allmendinger round out the top 10. That was Austin Green's first ever race, and he finishes seventh.
Yeah, good finish by him for sure. So playoff picture looks like this. On wins, Austin Hill is the points leader, as well as Chandler Smith. Other 10, Cole Custer, Jesse Love, Riley Hurst, A.J. Allmendinger, Parker Kligerman, Justin Allgaier, Brandon Jones, Sheldon Creed, Sammy Smith, and Fast Pasta, Anthony Alfredo, got the last spot right now. Ryan Sieg is actually tied with Anthony Alfredo in points, but Fast Pasta holds the tiebreaker. And as we talked about, SVG just got hosed because he basically would have been in the playoff picture by now. He lost 25 points for cutting the corner, which TD mentioned is basically the same penalty that Sheldon Creed got for intentionally wrecking Sammy Smith last year. Two different crimes, in my opinion. So he's 15 below the cutoff. Sam Mayer actually moved up five spots. I would not have guessed that. It's how he raced in this race that he actually got to the finish line. He's up to 19th, 48 back of the cut line.
Well, I will say when you're in the 20s in the points, you're passing some people who might not have been in the race at all.
Correct.
You're passing.
Yeah. Correct.
So it's a lot easier to move up five spots back there.
Strikes and gutters.
Yeah. So now we're on to the XPEL 225, the truck race. This guy, it felt like in this race, he passed 420 cars just because bad stuff kept happening to him. But he might have been the best driver on the track. 17-year-old Connor Zilish, he wins the pole for Spire in the number seven. Corey Heim also in the front row. Taylor Gray, Nick Sanchez in the second row. On the start, Taylor Gray gets out easily as Zilich locks it up and he misses the first turn and he's got something wrong with the car. So they got to go get it fixed. Something wrong with the truck. It's a truck race.
Truck.
Lap two, though, Taylor Gray has to serve a pass-through penalty. It turns out he jumped the start. Zilich, as we said, also has to pit. He flat spotted his tire and they have to fix something. It's Tanner Gray out front of Lane Riggs, who the number 38 truck, which I didn't note in my solo preview, had won each of the three prior races here. Todd Gilliland and then back-to-back Zane Smith. Damn. So he's got big boots to fill. And then Ross Chastain. And then we're going to get a yellow flag debris from Dale Quarterly. It's still yellow on lap five. Did we mention how ludicrous the yellow flags are at these road courses? Like half the stage is going to be gone. We got a lap six restart. Corey Heim in front of Nick Sanchez. Zilch's crew trying to replace the sway bar. That's what was wrong, the sway bar. He's a lap down.
Yeah. Yeah, lap seven, a lot of chaos on the track. Lane Riggs creeping up the track, going slow, can't move forward, can't go in reverse. He's kind of in a pickle. Well, Friesen, Andretti, and Vicente Salas all spun around as they get restarted. Riggs has to go in reverse down pit road as he lost power after a wheel hop. And then the first time, like Thomas just said, this will be the first time the 38 will not win the truck race at COTA, which is very sad. Lap eight, Dean Thompson spins Grant Impinger around and knocks him out of the top 10. They're able to keep it going, no caution. Lap nine, Corey Heim's going to go start to short pit from the lead. Connor Zilich is running the fastest laps, but he's also a lap down. And then Ross Chastain gets the pass-through penalty for exiting too fast out of pit road, basically as we wrap up stage one. So Nick Sanchez gets his first stage one of the season, followed by Ty Majeski, Tanner Gray, Tyler Ankrum, Christian Eckes in the top five. Chase Purdy, shout-out to the Bama Buggies, Matt Crafton, Jack Wood, and Ty Dillon all in the top ten.
So stage two, Connor Zilish gets his lap back. Lap 15 restart. Jack Hawksworth boxes Heim out in the first turn. He takes the lead. Heim is battling it out with Raja Karuth at the end of the lap for second. Next lap, Heim is running faster, and he gets by both Karuth and Hawksworth. Lap 18, battling for 15th place. Garcia, Zilish, Ankrum, and Enfinger get into it. That spins poor Zilish around. He drops back out of the top 20. Spotter says that Tyler Ankrum punted him. Very sad.
Lap 20, Matt Crafton, who's running 10th, has to do a pass-through penalty for going outside the rumble strips in the S's between turns 3 and 6. That drops him back to 19. Lap 21, rough day really continues for Connor Zilich. He and Sanchez both cut the S's and have to do a pass-through. And then lap 22, it takes some time, but a yellow finally comes out for Lawless Allen, who stalled out on the track. He had spun around as they were going side by side to commercial, and it was well over a minute before the yellow flag came out. It was like a merciful yellow flag to get that one out. And then a couple of trucks managed to get on the pit before the yellow flag comes out because they had about 2 minutes to do it. That was Ty Majeski and Taylor Gray.
Yeah, and then lap 23, we got short pitters under yellow. Could be their last pit stop of the day. Lap 24 restart, Friesen goes wide in the turn one, allowing Ben Rhodes to get the lead, followed by Heim and Majeski. Heim and Majeski get past Rhodes one lap later. Rhodes moves all the way back to third. With all the pitting and not pitting, like I said, it's hard to tell who has the best spot up and down the pylon. They need to denote something. Lap 26, final lap of the stage, Tanner Gray and Ross Chastain get into it, knocking them both out of the top 20. Heim gets his first stage win of the year. He's followed by Majeski, Hawksworth, Rhodes, Taylor Gray, Connor Zillish in sixth. Like, amazing. Somehow. Amazing. Raja Kruth, well, it could be the short pinning, too. Like I said, it's hard to tell. Dean Thompson, Matt Crafton round out the top 10.
So we're on to stage three. We restart with 14 to go. Corey Heim in front of Ty Majeski. Zillich is all the way up to third now, followed by Hawksworth and Crafton in the top five. By the end of the lap, Connor Zillich has already passed Ty Majeski, who's got a lot of smoke. Looks like a tire rub, possibly. 12 to go. Christian Eckes has to serve a pass through for Cody S's in seventh place. Big mistake late in the race, so that's going to push him outside the top 20. 10 to go. Corey Heim has pushed his lead out to 4.5 seconds and running some of the fastest times of the evening. And then, oh, no. We've got possible debris on the track. They didn't throw the yellow. Looks like it's a brake hose. Same lap that Ty Majeski and Connor Zillich were battling in second. Looks like Corey Heim's really going to run away, though, as he's opened this whole thing up to an 8-second lead.
Yeah, it's weird. Some of the stuff they throw flags out for, and then there's just something like
in the middle of the track.
I mean, maybe someone ran out there and touched and said, no, this is soft. Don't worry about it. 9 to go. Stephen Parsons looking for a rare top 10 for him, but guess what he did? He cut the S's. No top 10 for you. And then this guy, come on, lap five,
the second time,
lap five, Lawless Allen stalled out on the track. He's much bigger than a brake hose, so they have to bring out the yellow for Lawless Allen's on the track. Heimer's running away with it, but now it looks like we'll have a battle for the race.
Yeah, get some takers on the pit stops as the caution finally comes out. Restart with 3 to go. It's Corey Heim, Alec Ty Majeski, and then Taylor Gray and Stuart Friesen. 2 to go. I only mentioned his name one time before this, but how about Marco Andretti? His rear end housing is on the track. Just fell off the chassis of the truck. That brings out the yellow. And not only does it give us a yellow, we get a red flag to clean up the track.
Okay, this is
to go to overtime. But what a spectacle this was.
This is where I have some issues. Like, I can see early in the race, middle of the race, maybe you throw a red flag here. But to me, you know it's going to end in overtime this late. There were some trucks who they pitted, and that was their strategy, is we're going to pit in case there's some yellow flag laps. And maybe there'll be a whole bunch of yellow flag laps because someone's rear whatever the hell is going to be on the track. But then you throw out the red flag and you take their strategy away from them.
It doesn't make any sense.
Because if we would have had to, if we would have had to run three or four yellow flag laps, some of those guys would have to pit for gas.
Yep.
And those other people were like, hey, I'm smart, I'm going to do that now. And the other thing I noticed, I didn't mention on the Bristol race, NASCAR definitely ran extra yellow flag laps because they didn't want cars running as long on those tires because they were going to run out of tires. And there were some stages where like three or four extra yellow flag laps. To me, at that point, you're manipulating outcomes.
Yeah, I agree. I was like, my whole thought is we're just going to go 2 to go. We're going to go yellow. We're in overtime. You're in a road course too, where it takes forever to get around. So why, what's the need to go red and then go back? I don't know. Didn't make a lot of sense to me. Yeah. Let's talk overtime. It's Corey Heim and Taylor Gray out front. Corey Heim runs away pretty easy, like he'd done all night. I'm really not sure how hard Gray and Majeski are going to go behind because they're pretty low on fuel. They had not pitted yet. Stuart Friesen and Roger Kruse spin out, though, with less than a half lap to go and drop out of the top 10. Race continues, though, as Corey Heim, he'll take the checkers. That's his sixth win of the career win. Has it with a margin of 1.6 seconds. It's a 1-2 finish for Tricon with Taylor Gray getting a top two, finishing second, followed by Ty Majeski. Connor Zillich finishes fourth, and Ross Chastain worked his way back up in the top five, followed by Hawksworth, Ben Rhodes, Christian Eckes, Thompson, Tanner Gray. They ran out the top 10.
Just a second. Now, I don't know the number of times a team has had five entries, period. But it's just
not very often.
But the second time in series history that a team has had five entries in the top 10. So they, Tricon had first and second with Heim and Gray. And then they had Hawksworth, and they had Thompson, and they had Gray. So 1, 2, 6, 9, 10. So for the playoffs, the wins getting smaller for the non-winners. The four winners include Corey Heim, along with Rajah Kruth, Christian Eckes, Nick Sanchez. That means we got two 21-year-olds, a 22-year-old and a 23-year-old in the playoffs. Where are all the old people, Matt Crafton? The other six that would be in points above the cutoff, above the cutoff line, Ty Majewski, Tyler Ankrum, Taylor Gray, Matt Crafton, Grant Enfinger, and Tanner Gray. Rhodes all the way up to 1 point below the cutoff. He was in trouble a couple weeks ago, but not anymore. Friend of the program is Bailey Curry, is 24 points below the playoff cut line, and we won't mention where Deegs is. Oh, wait, she's not even in.
She's in the Xfinity. We didn't mention her either there. I'm not sure I remember Deegs in the entire broadcast from the Xfinity race, but that's for another podcast.
Yeah, well, and, you know, people said that Tricon had a different name when she ran for him, but they were trash trucks, but they just finished 1, 2, 6, 9, and 10.
Yeah, at COTA of all places.
Yeah, so this week we got the Cup Series and the Xfinity Series going to Richmond. We do not have the trucks going to Richmond. They're off until Martinsville. So we're going to start with the Toyota Owners 400 for the Cup Series at Richmond Raceway, Sunday, 7 p.m., coverage starting at 6 p.m. on Fox MRN, Sirius XM, NASCAR Radio. 300 miles or 400 laps around the three-quarter-mile D-shaped asphalt track, stages of 70, 160. Who comes up with this shit? And 170.
I don't know.
Why would you just do 133, 133, 133?
Yeah, I don't know. 130, 130, 140. I don't
100,
know.
100, 100,
200. I mean, come on. Like, I have no idea. This is the 13th time that NASCAR has raced on Easter, where some people will call sacrilegious. They push it to a night race, thankfully. So it'll be a 6 o'clock start here in God's time zone, in Central Time. So you can still have your Easter egg hunt with your kiddos. It's only the 10th time it's actually been a scheduled date. Other three times it was scheduled for Saturday and has rained. And then the last 2 years, we've had the Bristol Dirt Race on Easter. And prior to that, the last Easter scheduled Easter race was 1970. I will tell you, Tommy, I used to spend every Easter at my great grandmother's house, my mama's house. We used to watch a lot of NASCAR on Sundays for Sunday lunch. And it was a tough one for Easter because there was zero NASCAR on. It was kind of a hard Easter. So I actually don't hate Easter, an Easter NASCAR race.
There you go. I don't mind it. There was a time, though, Mother's Day, and how dare you race on Mother's Day or Easter?
Mother's Day and Easter was sacrilegious in NASCAR. We weren't going to do it.
Yeah. So they've been running the Cup Series here since 1953. It was originally a dirt track. Whoa. Don't tell NASCAR. They might bring dirt back to it.
No, please
they
don't.
Switched to asphalt in 68. Had 134 races here, 54 different winners. Among active drivers, Kyle Busch has 6 wins here, but the last one came in 2018. And 4 of them came between 2009, 2012. What was that, Generation 4?
Yeah, Generation 3, maybe.
Denny Hamlin has 4 wins, last one coming in 2022. Martin Truex has 3 wins, including a 2019 sweep and a win in 2021. Kyle Larson, Brad Keselowski, Joey Logano have 2 wins apiece. Chris Buescher, Alex Bowman, 1 each. Last year, Larson won the spring race. Buescher won in July.
So who you got is my first question.
First of all, we have a
– Let me give Christopher Buescher his credit. 300th career start. Couple numbers, overall numbers to ponder as you pick them. Let me give you these. 3 top drivers in the overall season driver's rankings are all from JGR. That's Denny Hamlin, Martin Truex Jr., Ty Gibbs. Probably been the best 3 racers the last 3 weeks. It's the Toyota Owners 400. Wink, wink. And they're all driving Toyotas. Wink, wink. So the fix could be in, folks.
Yeah. Another note I stumbled across. The only driver to complete all 1,607 laps run this year, Martin Truex.
Wow.
Martin Truex.
Wouldn't have pegged that one. But that's
he was one of the only 5 cars to finish every lap at Bristol.
Yeah, that's true. So, 7 different winners in the last 7 races at Richmond. It goes in order. Brad Keselowski, Alex Bowman, Martin Truex Jr., Denny Hamlin, Kevin Harvick, who will be in the booth, Kyle Larson, and Christopher Buescher. Before that, it was a Kyle Busch sweep in 2018, followed by a Martin Truex sweep in 2019. I want to know your long shot first, because Richmond's not a great long shot track.
Yeah, not. I had to dig into the weeds here for this one. I'm going Ryan Preece. He finished fifth here last time they raced.
That's a sneaky good that's a sneaky good pick. He was actually kind of on my list, TD, to be honest with you. We've seen Ryan Preece in spots be pretty good here, or at times, because I think he has a couple top fives and maybe like one top five, two top tens, which is not bad. My long shot's going to be Todd Gilliland. He actually starts in the top 15 here on average through four races. He's shown some spots this year where he's been pretty good. He was at super speedways, but he was in the top 10 at Bristol for a good bit of the race before I'm sure his tires gave out. So that's Todd Gilliland's going to be my long shot.
There you go. And then the winner, I'm going to go with Denny Hamlin. Last six races here, he's the only driver with five top fives. And he leads the pack with an average finish of 5.2. In that span of the last six races, he won the spring 2022 race, and he's also had 3 second place finishes, including last summer. So
I like that. I'm going to stick with his teammate. I'm going to go Christopher Bell, a guy who's never won here, but in the last six races, he's got four top fives, five top tens, and he's finished every race. He's been a runner-up here twice. The only thing is he hasn't led a lot of laps. In the last six races, he's only led 99 laps. But Christopher Bell is off to a good start in 2024. And Toyota's, like we said, wink, wink, usually run pretty good at Richmond. So I'm gonna take the 20 car.
Okay, now we go to the Xfinity Series. Guess what? Toyota Care 250. Toyota
oh, boy.
Care 250. Saturday, 1:30. So that's Easter Eve. Covered starting at 12:30 on FS1, MRN, and SiriusXM Radio. 187.5 miles, 250 laps. Oh, this one makes sense. Stages 75, 75, 100. Got a couple truck whackers in the field. Corey Heim is going to be driving for Sam Hunt Racing in the number 26. And then we're going to have Taylor Gray driving for Joe Gibbs Racing in the number 19. Also going to have Matt DiBenedetto making his season debut in the number 38 Ryan Sieg Racing car. And Bubba Pollard, short track upcoming legend or whatnot. It's going to be the number 88 for Junior Motorsports. Maybe this is the next breakout, Josh Berry. Junior seems to find these guys just hanging out at local tracks. Eric Almirola's back. He's a throwback whacker in the number 20 for Ty Gibbs Racing.
Semi-retired.
I want to retire, but let me drive any chance I get. It's not the Dash for Cash, but it's a qualifier for the Dash for Cash. So that means the four highest finishers, not named Corey Heim and Taylor Gray, because they're ineligible for points. If they finish in the top four, they will be in the Dash for the Cash next week. So
there you go. This is the 78th Xfinity race at Richmond. There are three previous winners in the field, Justin Allgaier, Cole Custer, and Chandler Smith. Chandler Smith won the race last year in 2023. It's his only Xfinity race at the track. Justin Allgaier has actually appeared here 23 times. He has two wins. They both came in 2020. He also has eight top fives and 11 top tens. Cole Custer has also raced here eight times, has one win back in the Xfinity Series in 2019 to go along with three top fives and three top tens.
I wanted to point out, because I like taking shots at whoever does NASCAR notes, because I would like that job myself. They actually, in the notes, said there was only two previous winners in the field. But then I was looked, and I was like, who won last year? And I saw it was Chandler Smith. And I was like, is he not running this race? And I looked up at the entry list, and he's running this race.
Look at there. Check their work. Yeah, check the work. All right, who's your winner?
I looked it up, Chandler Smith.
That was your guy.
He won the race last year. Going with Chandler Smith. Hard to pick against a guy who won in his only race, plus he's in a Toyota this year, and it's the Toyota whatever Care 250. And I honestly, Joe Gibbs Racing cars have been running better than Colic this year, so he's upgraded for now. Teams.
I like that. I actually kind of thought about going Austin Hill. I mean, he's just kind of been the guy that's won everywhere so far. But I'm actually going to go with Old Faithful. I'm going to go with Justin Allgaier. He's got two wins here. Came back 4 years ago. He's usually in the top 10, top five at Richmond. And I'd like to see the seven car get back in the winner's circle. He's been pretty good this year. And usually this type of track is a track that he does pretty well in.
All righty. Now we come to the point where we do the NASCAR paint schemes, our favorites for this week. Ross Chastain's been on a heater. The number one Busch Light car has been pretty awesome. Then we got Kyle Busch, and I believe this is a new sponsor, Rebel Bourbon, number eight. And then we have Bubba Wallace in the McDonald's, number 23. He's got the minimalist French fries on the side. Daniel Hemric, LA Golf. I thought it might be like a Top Golf, but I think it's actually, it's either Wiener Pills or Equipment. I think they sell Equipment.
Equipment, yeah, that's what you're going with.
And then we got Michael McDowell, Long John Silvers, you know, haven't been to one in about 20 years. I used to like him as a youth, and guess what? Next week? Truck Race is the Long John Silver something.
Oh, right, that's right. They're a sponsor. Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, so liking that. And then the last one I had picked out, Daniel Suarez, 2 weeks late for St. Patrick's Day in a pretty sharp green Quaker State car.
The other ones I had really quick, the Josh Berry back in the old Sunny D car, which I'm always a fan of. Can I give a thumbs down? And I'm really low. I know Chase Elliott's got a lot of sponsors. The 9 Unifest Uniform Solutions car,
yeah,
like, is not mint. Does not do it for me on a racetrack at all. No. I'm sorry. It's fine. I also like the Mobile One paint scheme from Christopher Bell. You see them run that. It's maybe why I picked him in the 20. And then I had one more for. Let me scroll down really quick. Oh, this is what it was. I hadn't thought about this in forever. Ricky Stenhouse is going to be in the Kroger car on the front, but on the sides, it's the NOS Energy Drink Chevrolet. I haven't thought about NOS Energy Drinks in 15 years. Didn't know it was a thing, but I was like, okay, your move, Ricky. So there you go.
Yeah, I'm going to be honest. I never tried it because anytime it was mentioned, people are always like, ew.
Yeah. It elicited a really bad sound.
Yeah, I sort of like, who was Hamlin's sponsor last week or the week before? Because I'm wondering if this is going to be his new paint scheme with the thingy going on the side. Because it was a different sponsor, but it had the same thing on the side.
Let me think. He's had the he had the Express Oil Change car.
Maybe that was it. Maybe that's their thing. But I like that little thing, like the tire treads going.
It was Mavis. The Mavis tires. I think was he right back in the Mavis paint scheme?
It was just, well, no, Mavis is this week. I thought it was the same, like, kind of paint scheme, but it was like a pink. But I could be thinking of something totally different.
Yeah, Express Oil they have that same tire tread that Mavis has.
Oh, okay. So that, okay.
Maybe, but I don't remember him running it. Yeah, he ran it in Bristol, actually, 2 weeks ago. Yeah, that's what it was.
And then the Xfinity, nothing standing out. I wanted to do the Flying J Coffee one because it would look pretty sweet with the brownish hues, but then they slapped the red and it made it look stupid.
Yeah.
But they're owned by that Jimmy Haslam. Not a big fan of that guy. He's trying to screw the city of Cleveland.
And it's not like the city of Cleveland hasn't been screwed enough already.
Yeah. Screw that guy, I say.
I don't really have an Xfinity one for you. It's kind of a down week. I'm gonna be honest.
Yeah, well, it was a disappointing week in the old Xfinity. So he gets us.
So good weekend to run it.
That's all we got. That's all we got. That's all we got this week. I'm so fired up. Two races. Should be able to watch them live. First time I've done that in a while. So
there you go. Dial them up at 6 o'clock Central on Sunday night.
All righty. So that's been this week's edition of Loose Lugnuts. We'll be back next week to wrap up what had happened here in Richmond and what's going to happen in Martinsville. So the back-to-back Virginia races. Virginia, it's for lovers. Or Gusters for lovers?
I don't know state sayings. I'm retired from that one.
All righty. Have a good one, everyone.
I grew up in Texas where football was my game. Until that racing fever started burning in my brain. I started running mini stocks when I was 13. And won a short track championship when I was just 16. I met a man named Harry Hyde and he built a car for me. Sponsored by Granddaddy Hillen's Drilling Company. We ran in 5 Grand Nationals when I was 17. My Talladega finish was the start of my big dream. Thank you for the ride, Harry Hyde. And I'm glad I had Granddaddy on my side. You've given me my wings, now it's up to me to fly. Thank you for the ride, Harry Hyde. They say that Lady Luck has given me the breaks. I must admit she smiled a bit, but it's me that runs the race. Now you can't be a champion due to luck or circumstance. I'll do the best I can for those who've given me the chance. Thank you for the ride.